And if you spend a year building and haven't talked to users or put it out there or failed basically on your product, then you haven't done anything. You're not a startup. You're just a daydreamer. Optimism without action is daydream, you know?
Being on the show.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Seed Stories. I have my buddy Mayad here from Sigma OS on the show today. Sigma OS is a new browser that makes you faster and better, more organized, and my favorite feature, removes all the distractions so you can get your job done on a day-to-day basis. And recently, they went toe-to-toe to Notion on Product Hunt and nearly beat them out. So Mayad, thanks for joining on the show today.
No, thanks for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys.
We always start from the foundation. You know, when you were a little kid, did you grow up and say, I want to be a startup founder when you were playing in the sandbox? Take us all the way back.
Oh, no. No, when I was a kid, I wanted to be Batman. So different. so different than that. I was always, since I was very young, curious about building, creating, and trying to invent almost. That kind of pulled me towards more like science. There was a time in my life where I was like, I want to be a rock star and musician. So I went very deep on sound engineering and everything before starting like Sigma OS, computer science, or the startup world. That's what I was driving towards. And I realized right now, the rock stars of our generations have kind of become startup founders. Mm. And it kind of felt like these two worlds are pulling together of like building something cool where people enjoy, because being a rock star is just for me at least, it was the pleasure of creating something where people feel passionate and get a great joy out of it. It wasn't the fame or anything like that. It was more like, shit, you build something that so many people love and get, you know, memories and experiences from it. So that naturally went into me wanting to build software, become a software engineer. I was very much like binge watching The Social Network on loop when I was
I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. They leave out a lot of the parts, a lot of the difficult parts in that movie.
You know, I tell founders all the time who are starting companies, if you think coding while taking tequila shots and like going to clubs is what a startup is, then I'm sorry to spoiler alert. It's a lot different than that.
I think for me, it was also like starting my own thing, like when I was first year of uni, trying something. And I was like, why am I not like montaging this? What is this? Why am I not like splitting the spoils already? And it was the book Lean Startup Process when I started reading that one of the first things it says, like, yeah, you see in the movies that, you know, there is this whole moment where you have this epiphany of great idea, and then you start building this montage, like in montage, you're building this startup, and the ending part of the movie is like, oh, how do we split the spoils? But the reality is there's like massive grunting and massive, like very almost boring day-to-day things that you need to do to get to that point. It's not like you're always solving the most interesting problems every single second of every day. There are parts of your day where you have to do what needs to be done to build a better product, build a better company.
So King's College, you did a CS degree there. Massive online course that YC had, the free online course, which I encourage everybody, no matter what, if you're applying to YC or not applying to YC, there's 100%. A free online course on how to start a startup. And it is excellent and filled with a ton of resources. I also saw that you won the Facebook hackathon. Tell me what happened there.
King's College London was an interesting journey for me. Okay, so I'm originally from Iran, born there, raised there, and I migrated to UK 2016, basically with a backpack and a couple grants in my pocket, like, let's change the world, let's conquer the world kind of a mentality. And then I realized, okay, I have to learn a lot of things. First year, I was always trying to find a friend or someone to start a startup with. Tried a few times, it didn't work out as well. And then I think it was my second year where I overnight got this email from Facebook that, hey, actually, you're part of our waitlist for this competition. Do you want to join? I was like, fuck it, let's go. It's 24 hours. Let's build something. And it was really exciting because we went there. Everyone was building like these super ambitious things that you might think like, oh, this will take 3 months to build. And we were building them over a night. For us, it was kind of like this augmented reality app that had also a bit of computer vision in it where you would point at any bit of a movie and it will like give you information like, oh, it's this movie, this is its trailer, these are the main actors and everything like that. Lord and behold, like we won the competition. We were sitting there dead after like 24 hours of coding thinking like, okay, can they finish the announcement so we can go home? And they announced us as the winner and we were in shock. And then we were invited to US for their global competition, but unfortunately during that time it was Donald Trump's presidency, and there was a whole travel ban. Can't even accept your documents because, you know, you're Iranian and we can't. And I missed the international, like the global competition at Menlo Park, which was disappointing. But during that time, I met very interesting people, Ali and Sourav, who are my two co-founders, that hired me as their first engineer for their previous startup called Loop, which was a kind of intelligent event planning app. It was back in the day where people were using Facebook and stuff like that for their events. And the idea was like, we make it easy to be on everyone's calendar, shared photos. You can easily order food or Uber from the app. Everything was there. They hired me as their first engineer. And it was very funny because like towards the end, when Loop wasn't doing well and I had to move on to the next startup, Ali turns to me and is like, who knows, maybe one day we'll be working together or I would be working for you. And we were laughed it off kind of, and we're like, fine, it's fine. Like, it's good. Let's just move on from this and we'll see what happens. And down the line, 2 years down the line,
here you are.
We're co-founders.
That's such an excellent way to get together. Oftentimes I'll see seed decks or pre-seed decks where like they haven't even built an MVP and they've been working on the product for like a year. What do you think it is about human performance that when put under extreme constraints and stress yields really excellent results? You know what I mean?
Because one of the talks Michael Seibel gives is about specifically MVPs. It's like time boxing thing. You think like unless something is perfect and everything is perfect, you shouldn't put it out there. And this is the biggest fears first-time founders. Like they generally think of, if I built the perfect product, the moment I put it out there, people will come to the mountain and everyone will like praise me and love me and everything, where it's nothing like that. The fact that you know you have this deadline. Mm. So when you're building an MVP, you have 4 weeks, time boxing it by 4 weeks and say, whatever goes in here, so I have to be very frugal. Your mind will be very creative and a lot better at building. And if you spend a year building and haven't talked to users or put it out there or failed basically on your product, then you haven't done anything. You're not a startup. You're just a daydreamer. Optimism without action is a daydreamer.
Well said. The pace of execution, it can really be ramped up if you have other people holding you accountable. I remember my first week of YC back in 16 was this like circle of other extremely talented founders, and you come every week and your progress is not as good as theirs. And you're continuing to, you know, have this imposter syndrome. And so what I tell any founder, whether you get into YC or what any incubator or not, is like, find your group of 3 to 5 people who you ask explicitly, say, I want to check in with you every week. And I want you to hold me accountable. You know, I think it's a powerful, powerful force. So during uni, is that when you got the idea for Sigma OS?
I kind of worked part-time a lot because of my situation, financial situation. I couldn't just be a uni student, so I had to work at the same time, which meant like full-time studying and part-time working at all times. And I always wanted to build startups. So first year, I tried like two ideas, one for food sharing between students, failed. I tried another thing with like augmented reality for trying on clothes, failed. And then I actually joined the company called Veet, who are now a very successful team. Shout out to Saba. Like, he's done great on that front because it was very different when I joined. And I am not a good employee. I can say that. Poor man had to fire me after a week. Then I joined Loop. That was my third year of uni. I joined Loop. And then beginning of fourth year, I joined another company called Compose. And when I was writing my dissertation, kind of that's when the pandemic had also hit and everything. And I was kind of like thinking, okay, where do I go next? At that time, I was starting to apply for different jobs and I needed to get another visa, not a student visa, to be able to stay in the UK. So at the same time, I was trying to get this visa in the UK called Exceptional Talent Visa. It's kind of similar to the O-1 Extraordinary Abilities in the US. So I was trying to get that so I can find a job and on the side do my own startup. And I've got to the late stages with Facebook specifically and Apple, but it wasn't feeling right. So I was like, I like for a while to be my own thing.
Tell me why a guy like you who came from Iran, had no money in his pockets, you know what I mean, was like scraping by and is getting these offers from Apple and Facebook and is like, nah.
I don't know. It's almost like this innate, my co-founder Ali explains it really well with me. I don't have a urge or a drive to success. I have a rage to success. I've been told by so many people that, yes, like, oh, no, you can't do this. I remember when I first, second year or third year of uni, when I was like startup and I wanted to go to YC and I was thinking of applying to YC, everyone was telling me like, no, this is for people who go to MIT and Stanford. Like, these are a different breed of people. Don't even think about it. And it was really interesting because like, even from close people, close friends of mine at uni would tell me this, set your standards a bit lower than what you are right now.
Mm.
And that kind of built in this kind of almost a chip or a need to like, I need to make my own thing. I'm not the most agreeable person. I am super ambitious. Like, this is a problem I felt at Loop, at Hose. Even though the teams were great, I just was way too ambitious and way too much like I wanted to move a lot faster. And I felt like if I join another company, especially a conglomerate like Apple or Facebook or now called Meta, I wouldn't be able to move fast.
Mm.
I wanted to run and everyone was like, no, power walking is also good. I was like, I just want to run. So around that time, literally, I applied to EF and Antler. So these are two like kind of founder focused accelerators here in the UK.
For listeners, EF is Entrepreneur First, that pairs entrepreneurs together to go work on a problem. And Antler is another one.
Almost the same thing. Like they're global. Antler actually, it's more global than EF. But they're very similar, like pairing founders together to just pre-idea anything. It's more about like investing in the people than an idea.
Right.
Like, let's bring great minds together and let's see what happens. And when I was going through EF, it was really interesting because they couldn't really categorize me as super technical or super salesperson. So they were like, actually, what about not this batch? But I remember the feedback I got from, I think her name was Pepe, who I knew personally as well, and chatted afterwards, she was like, look, what the feedback was like, the founder was talking about like, we need to keep an eye on this guy because he's going to build something big and we want him to build it with us. But let's see what happens. Let's give him a few more months. And at the same time, I was going through Antler and Antler was like, yeah, it would be great to have you as like a kind of talker personality, kind of a salesperson / product person. I was like, cool, let's join. Like, I would love to do that. And it was funny because Ali was going through EF at the same time I was going through Antler, and we joked like he was doing his own startup at that moment. I was doing my own startup, and Sora was doing consulting and basically contract work. It was funny because the two of us talked to each other, Ali and I, and we said like, oh, we have the two, you know, big UK networks, Next is YC, and we set it off as a joke, not thinking anything of it, right? And 2 months, 3 months down the line, the person that I wanted to work with kind of dropped out. Ali's co-founder dropped out. And in the meantime, I was researching like all the ideas I could do as a new startup. And that's where I kind of hit a wall and was like, oh shit, what about a new browser? What if I build a new browser? And when you say that, thinking who builds browsers, you're instantly like terrified and you're like, this is insane.
Yeah.
Am I building a browser? Like, who builds a browser? Google builds a browser. I don't build a browser. And that was actually funny enough. Like, everyone at Anthur turned around was like, you can't build a browser. Like, you need a team of 50, 100 people to build a browser. Which, funny enough, all our competitors, whether it's Google, whether it's the newcomers, and the funny part is we're a team of 5.
By the way, I'll say it's super impressive. I've played around with it, and like the fact that you build that with such a small team, I think, again, this is something that a lot of the listeners should hear, is like, build quickly. A small team of very talented, hardworking people can actually execute in areas that are dominated by major players, and, you know, then go up on Product Hunt and go toe-to-toe with Notion. You know, I mean, I think that like what I think that people should hear from your story is to believe in themselves. Like, you at every turn, it seems like, bet on yourself rather than the resume mark from Facebook or Apple or anybody like that. The other thing that I think that people should take away from your story is the chip on your shoulder. Anytime somebody says that you can't do something, you save that. You know, David Goggins is this famous Navy SEAL. He's got an amazing story. He just came out with a new book that's phenomenal. I recommend it to all entrepreneurs and anybody in general. But he actually saves all the messages from haters and records them in audio and listens to them back to himself to like remind him, you're not going to defeat me. I will crush you all. And so it sounds like you had a little bit of a haters mixtape going on in your head.
You are the last line of defense for yourself, right? If you don't believe in yourself, don't expect anyone else to believe in you. So there is, and after a while, when you start believing in yourself, I was fortunate enough to start seeing incredible people popping up around me. A person I highly respect and was a great help was Simon Banscalina. He was one of the founding team members of Monzo, kind of like a low-key godfather to a lot of young startup people here in London. And this guy, like, after I believed in myself and when I went in front of him and he saw that I believe in what I'm saying and I'm trying, he kind of took a bet on me and made a lot of introductions and tried to help me as well. It wasn't the fact that I knew him from before. It was just like, in that meeting, in that first impression, it's very much like the first impression, like in confident. And it's a very hard balance to strike. It's hard. It's hard to change the world or build a product that millions, if not tens or hundreds of millions of people will use without having this kind of like a reality distortion build around yourself, that you believe in yourself, that you're going to make it. And anyone that says like, no, you can't, oh, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, you're not charismatic enough, it'll just like kind of ricochet off of you. And you just say, I'll make this happen. I believe this will happen. There's also a fine line to also be realistic. I'm not saying like, think, oh, I'm going to fly. If I think enough, I'm going to fly. I'm going to actually fly. So I'm going to jump off the roof and hopefully I fly. It's not a thing like that. It's more genuinely having a reality check within yourself. And all of this comes to being brutally and hard transparent with yourself. The thing you mentioned about like find accountability buddies for yourself, like 2 or 3 of them that will tell you and hold you accountable if you've done progress on your work. The biggest part of that, I think, is not finding the people, not having people telling you the truth. It's, are you honest enough with yourself to take that feedback and be like, you know what? You're right. Last week, I didn't do the work. I said I'm going to do X. I didn't do X. I'm not going to bring excuses of like, Well, I was kind of tired and, you know, this thing came up and maybe I need to do it a bit better. Like, and I didn't launch because I wanted this one more feature to come in. If you're really honest with yourself, you know, deep down, we always know that when we have this feeling of guilt sometimes when, you know, when we haven't performed, we have this thing in ourselves, this mechanism of like guilt that no matter what, it's going to live in us. And we're like, okay, actually, to be honest, I didn't do the work.
That's really well said and important, that level of internal humility. So you, Ali, Saurav got together. When did you write the first line of code and sort of when did things start to take off?
The first line of code was somewhere in Feb of 2021. So that's literally when we started like writing the code and started talking to a few VCs. Me just going in front of like 7% and Excel and trying to convince them, hey, there is a revolution happening and we can be one of the first people on top of that. And we're building a browser. That's the thing. Like, we're not going to sugarcoat it as this kind of, oh, productivity tool that is an augmentation of your mental model. No, productivity browser. Designed specifically to make you better at working on the web. That's it. Now we're working on web apps instead of native apps and offline. We're working more on the web. So we want to give you the tool that is best designed for working on web apps. That's it. And trying to convince that and building that product. And I think it was around mid-March 2021 when we got our first check from 7%. We wanted to do a whole fundraising round then, but then 7% suggested, hey, you guys, your vibe seems like YC founders. Maybe you should apply. Like, you seem very ambitious. If you were that crazy, maybe put it to the test. Go to YC.
Yep.
And we applied to YC, and it was really interesting experience for us because when we were going through mock interviews, and this is something everyone does before getting into YC, when they get the email for YC interview, the first thing you do is go on YC alumni pages and book like 10, 20 mock interviews. And the mock interview we did, at the end of it, we asked them, how does YC feel? I never forget this one phrase a YC founder told me that I tell everyone now. It's like, YC genuinely feels like the Olympics of startups.
Yeah.
You have 3 months and it's every day. You're going to be the most productive of your life. Because you have this, it goes back to the hackathon thing, as you mentioned.
There's
a clear deadline. There's a clear goal where if you miss it, you miss it. And there is no do-over. There is no redo button, right? So you make every day count. And it was really interesting because I was moving my house when I received the email for the interview. I remember the email hit my inbox and I see update on your YC application. I open it and I'm instantly scanning for the unfortunately word. You know, the whole like, they give you the good stuff.
Bad news, bad news.
Unfortunately.
yeah.
I read it and I don't see the unfortunate. It says like, oh, you seem interesting. We want to talk to you. And I instantly call Ali and Saurav and trying to like, hey, we got this. And they're like, oh, how many weeks do we have to prepare? I was like, we have 2 days. 2 days until our interview because we applied super late and we're basically when we did the interview, their whole kickoff was happening that Friday.
Yeah.
So like we were the last people to be interviewed basically. And for 2 days straight, we were walking around London with Ali and shooting the most famous YC question, interview question to each other. What are you building? And we were trying to optimize that because we knew and what we read, heard from everyone, that answering that question appropriately dictates how your entire interview will go. And for us, at least, it was very much that because the way we answered it made it very much like all the questions that came afterwards very appropriate for us. And funny story, after that, the interview finished and we came out and we thought we bombed it. We thought like it was really bad. The feeling almost every YC founder has. And we were waiting for the call. And until 4 a.m., we didn't get the call. Me being like optimistic, I was like, you know what, guys, it's late. They're probably being mindful not calling us. their call is tomorrow. And then we get the email and we're like, oh, we got rejected. We're reading and it's Gustav saying like, hey, actually, I really like your team and everything. I just have a few more questions. Can we jump on another call? And I was like, fair enough. Let's jump on another call. We jump on another call. And after 100 more questions from him, he pops a question of like, would you like to do YC? And we were like over the moon. And
wow,
it really, it was lots of poor memories for our team. Like when,
yeah,
there is actually a video of us losing our shit on Ali's Twitter about this, where literally he asked, would you like to do YC? And we were saying, like, we're screaming, banging on the table and everything.
Yeah.
And it was like a very surreal moment. And then the ugly rear view of me being Iranian showed its face again. We had a hiccup with YC 2 weeks in. I can't disclose the details of it yet, but we basically had to be kicked out of YC, me specifically as an Iranian, and then get reinstated again because we figured out the solution, the thing they wanted to. I had to show extra checks. Hey, I'm not a threat. Come on. I'm just building a cool product. And that was the moment where even YC was kind of came back to me having a rage for success, because even Gustav and the partners were a bit like, this is insane. You guys are survivors. Like, we kicked you out, you stick through it, and 2-3 weeks later, you're back in YC. And this is something that has never happened in the history of YC.
That's amazing.
Being kicked out and reinstated.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's a lot of stories of people being kicked out for doing stupid shit, but you did something that was outside of your, that something happened to you that was outside of your control. I think one of the things that's most salient for me is that what you had was a way to clearly articulate what you were working on. And that was that's the hook. And so one of the things that I teach founders a lot, and that YC teaches founders a lot, and great investors teach founders a lot, is your one liner. And your one liner is like the browser that works the way that you do, Sigma OS, right? And the importance of that is you lodge in someone's brain immediately, what are we talking about? And now I can level set exactly what the conversation is going to be about. What founders get wrong in the very early stages is they try to make their company sound so impressive, right?
Yeah.
We are the foremost machine learning, artificial intelligence platform that's going to revolutionize healthcare. And I'm like, I don't know what you do.
No, interesting enough, the thing is, like, even for if I was to talk to a startup founder or like someone basically non-marketing talk, the browser that thinks the way you do or the browser that works the way you do, it's kind of a friendly kind of consumer way of talking, and you kind of creates this intrigue of, what does that mean, right? You kind of get it, but it creates that interest for you. But for example, for YC or someone that I have limited time and I need to make sure they understand completely what Sigma OS is.
I probably botched your one-liner. So what I would love to do here is like your version of it and then back that up with more details on how Sigma OS works.
So Sigma OS is like Slack for your browser. That means every project, every company that you're working for has a specific workspace with a set of tools and resources and tabs organized in a to-do list format. This means you can go through your daily workflow, like a to-do list, and get stuff done and move on to the next task without being distracted.
That's awesome. So the thesis is crystal clear. I mean, Chrome and Safari and all the other browsers that are out there are from a bygone era, and Sigma OS is the future. So it's exciting to see what you've done. I want to hear about the nitty gritty around how you got to this amazing funding round. And I'll talk more about it here at the end, but you get through YC, you get to demo day, you know, obviously I also ask people about what hiccups they face, but literally you got kicked out and got back into YC. So that's a hell of a hiccup. Did you raise around demo day and sort of did you follow the guidelines of YC of like, you know, building your sort of simple deck, you know, putting together your hit list of investors, starting to talk to investors a week before demo day. Walk me through your process, and if you had some nuances to it that you ginned up for, since you like to be a little bit different.
So ours was a very interesting process. Like, funny enough, we're releasing a blog on our experience as a C-stage startup for fundraising, and how many myths there are out there and how many like actual realities there are. We kind of followed what YC said. And because for us, we were very much focused, we had the runway. So we were very focused on talking to users and utilizing like all these partners that you can have easy access to at this moment and talk to and go back to at that time to optimize our product and our user experience and our user acquisition. Now, our biggest hiccup was I took a bit of a gamble. I said, okay, fundraising, all our important meetings, we'll do 1 week before demo day, but the week before demo day, we're going to do Hacker News and Product Hunt. So Hacker News happens on the Monday, right? I have a bunch of meetings lined up. Hacker News goes live in the morning. And a lot of YC founders now have this kind of experience with Hacker News, where Hacker News can be a bit rough on you.
And it's the gauntlet.
ours ended up being very, very bleak. And it was really interesting because after that, when the Hacker News kind of started dying down that day, I had my investor meetings and I was literally sitting through those meetings, like secondary meetings where it was like, oh, we're about to decide if we're going to invest in you or not. And the partners literally reading us the Hacker News comments, like, why do you think this is going to work? This is what people are saying. So it was really rough. And this is going to something that's going to happen. In reality of fundraising, it's not like great meeting after great meeting after great meeting. It's like you can have a great first meeting and a horrendously bad second meeting, or vice versa, right? The thing is, like, it's not like one good idea, one good meeting is going to get you all the money. You have to go through a lot of rejections. It's exactly like dating. The way I explain, at least how I experience fundraising, is exactly like dating. You go through a lot of rejections, a lot of bad dates to get to few good experiences and hopefully one partner at the end, right?
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened with us. Like, a few days later, Product Hunt happens and we are taking off. We instantly are breaking through the walls. We're product of the day. The week after that, we're product of the week. And basically, when demo day came, we had even one product of the week. So product of the day, product of the week. And we had already oversubscribed. So my pitch, demo day pitch, was like, this is what we're doing. And FYI, we're subscribed and we're not fundraising anymore.
Wow.
And it was a bit of like,
I just have to like, I mean, from a little boy from Iran who almost got kicked out, who turned down Apple and Facebook to have an oversubscribed round on demo day. It's like, that's a small select group of people. It's like, Parker Conrad had an oversubscribed round, and you know? So that's awesome, dude. And I think what I really love about this is two things. One is, Hacker News haters, they do serve a purpose, actually, I think, is that many of them provide super articulate feedback for your product. And as an early stage founder, you cannot be scared of that. And I think that's really special that you took that in a positive way and used it to rally yourself. As painful as it was. The second thing is, you're exactly right about rejection. The most hard part, founders out there who are thinking about fundraising, is you line up all these meetings and you get all the no's first. The yeses don't come till the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like, you're in this baby pageant showing everybody your beautiful baby, and everybody's saying, I think your baby's ugly. And the baby has to make it through to the end of the pageant. You know,
I would say it's worse than saying, like, what I hated about the rejection, some of the rejection email more, it was like, oh, we believe in you and you're doing great work. Because it's kind of like non-committal no, which is very understandable, right? They want to say no, they are not interested at this moment. But they want to, if things progress, they want to pursue down the line. But what you will see in these emails, they're like, and this is where you as a founder have to be realistic and you have to understand no is no here, right? Don't think like, oh, if I come back in a week to them and change my whole business model and everything, they're going to invest in me. The reality of investment is most investors will not match with you, with the idea you have, with what you want to build. And the great investments come from the fact that there is a partner at a fund that has a strong belief in the thesis that you're building. That's it. That's where you're going to get your investment. And you're going to get a lot of like, we love you, but no, boom, not yet. Like opens a little bit of a door for you being like, maybe in the future, which is, again, like dating, you will hear that. It's like, it's not you, it's a me situation. It's a no at the end and move on. Move to the next thing. Focus on the next mission that you have. Because the most important thing for your startup is building a startup. You're not building a company to fundraise, you're building a company and fundraising to make that company happen. So the primary focus of yours should be building your product. And as soon as you build that conviction with one investor, think of it this way. When you hear no, it can be very disheartening. But all it takes to convert a lot of investors is one yes. Yep. Because when you start getting yeses behind you, it kind of avalanches. And it becomes like, almost like, this seems like very hot. I want to be on it. You can call it FOMO. You can call it also conviction. Like, people get a lot more conviction when they see like their colleagues, their friends, that people they trust their value on taking a bet on you.
Nailed it 100%. I think the other thing about your dating analogy, which I really like, is like if you go out for drinks with somebody and they don't text you back for a couple of days, they're probably not that into you, right?
Yeah.
But if they text you that night and said, I had a wonderful time with you, that's a good sign. And so what I always tell founders is be realistic, right? Look at every investor that you've talked to and say, tell yourself some hard truths. Did they get back to you right away asking you more questions? Or did you have to chase them down? Right?
Yeah.
And so look at your funnel like a sales funnel in that regard. And it'll help you save a lot of time and mental stress and emotional stress.
100%. It's genuinely like how the meeting ends dictates if there is going to be a follow-up. If you hear at the end like, oh, we'll follow up with an email like tomorrow or tonight or like in a day or two, that means very much like, okay, it's happening. But if you hear back something at the end of the call for like, oh, we'll go back, talk to the team and get back to you. That is like a non-committal, like nothing, right? They might come back, but at that moment, in what I did in my head, it was like, this is done. I'm walking away from this table and focusing on the next thing.
So 4 million raised, Local Globe, 7%, Moonfire, my boy Hampus at TrueSight, Mateo from 8 Sleep, just a really killer Pioneer Fund, a really killer roster of backers. And you're right, it's just a means to an end. But you have gotten to the next stage. I always like to end on, what does the next 12 months look like? And what does the next 10 years look like?
The next year for us, 2023, we want to bend the world of browser. Our mission, our vision for SigmaOS, we want to be the generation defining browser. How Notion became the new note-taking tool, where Airbnb became the hotel, Uber became the ride-sharing app. We want SigmaOS to be the browser everyone starts using and change that for better and good. And that is very much the next 10 years for us. The next year for us is trying to continue the growth we had. I think we 50x our user base since last year, and we want to continue doing that and hit the highest of high growths. So everyone, when you, for example, John, walk into a coffee shop and see someone working on their laptop, you see them have SigmaOS and you're like, holy shit, talk to the founder of them. They're pretty cool guys.
He's a legend. He's a legend. Go to sigmaos.com, download the browser, the only browser you need, honestly. It's fantastic.
It's really good.
You're a little biased, my friend. Mayad, it was really good to have you on today. And, you know, thanks for taking the time to do this.
Awesome.
To be here with us.
Thank you for having me.